in all due respect to the town council, I think when you're looking at taxpayer money, taxpayers traditionally look to the departments to ask more questions, who spend the most money. You know, and so when you have them ask a lot of questions about the school department or the DPW, the reason for that is they're the two largest budgets in town. Yep. And they reach every square inch of the community.
This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 503 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with Town Administrator Jamie Helen and Marketing Communications Specialist Anne Marie Tracy. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talk about reopening, vaccine, local delivery for the homebound, the library, and then what's next for reopening. We also touch on the senior center and the St. Patrick's meal provided by the fire department. The Black Box has events in April as we start reopening, and the Project Envoy calendar will be updated in April. And we're also talking about the Think Franklin First gift cards. We also get into the budget cycle. We're into the budget series through April and May. Capital is coming to the Capital Subcommittee. The Joint Budget Subcommittee meeting remains to be scheduled. That'll bring FinCom, Town Council Subcommittee, and School Committee together. The FinCom hearings are spread over 4 days total, 3 in April, 1 in May. And then the Town Council hearings for the budget are 2 days in May. Those dates are all on the town calendar. Links to the key topics covered here are included in the show notes. The recording runs around 41 minutes. So let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM. And on the local area dial at 102.9, here for another Talk Franklin session with our town administrator, Jamie Helen. Jamie, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. It's springtime, Steve.
I've got short sleeve shirts. I don't know. People won't be able to see that, but it's my first short sleeve in a while.
I will when I'm off. I still have the work outfit on until after this interview is over at 1 o'clock. And it's
I have to go back and complete my walk as well. So, yeah, it's supposed to be 70 sometime. So we'll see if that really happens.
But feels like Florida outside. Like
very humid, too, as well.
Very muggy. I'll take it.
Yes. And Anne-Marie Tracy, our marketing communication specialist, has joined us as well for this. Thank you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Steve. I agree with the weather. It's great. I'm enjoying every second of it.
We'll take it, especially in New England. It's kind of a roller coaster, but you know, it helps us, particularly as we get into the kind of reopening pieces, because now we can do more things outside, and that's going to help us manage this, you know, transition, if you will.
Absolutely. So, well, you know, we've had good news this past week, right? Where we went to phase 4.1. Still a little unclear on what 0.2 or 0.3 or 0.4 is, but.
Or when they're going to come too.
Maybe you should add a few more 5 and 6 and 7. I don't know. But, you know, I know that the vaccination overall statewide has hit about, 1.2 million people.
Yep.
So it's about 1.2 out of the 5.6 or so million adults. So we're looking at about a little less than a quarter of the population in Massachusetts. A quarter of the population in Massachusetts got vaccinated today. Obviously, next couple of weeks, those over 50, and then everybody on April 19th, which is really the great news. Everybody 16 and over will get vaccinated. And now, for the listeners out there, you're going to hear all of us public health folks continue to encourage every single person to get vaccinated when it's your opportunity. Even if you get it a little further down, May, June, July, August, if you're waiting for your primary care, okay, but really take advantage of this opportunity now. I just happened to notice today they put tens of thousands of appointments up. If folks follow at Vaccine Time, they'll notice them up there all over the state. Plenty of options for people. You know, if people want to get back to a normal and they want to avoid even a new normal, this is the way to do it. Locally here in Franklin, as everybody probably knows, we've been semi-prohibited from doing local delivery vaccines, or the benchmarks are so high they really weren't feasible for us to do them. There was no financial incentive from the governor on this for the local vaccine clinics. Well, the locality would have to pick up the financial obligation, and then we would have to open up to every citizen in the state. So basically the taxpayer of Franklin would be paying for other members of the towns coming here to get vaccinated. So we kind of put a halt on that. We were able to get under the regulations from DPH, the State Department of Public Health, we were able to get the housing authorities done, our first responders, which has been in the press quite a bit, on a 5-town consortium. And we were able to, in our priority with the senior center, we know there's some discussion out there about the extra shots, or sometimes the vials have a little less than 10 shots per vial, and sometimes the nurse administering them can get out 11 or 12. So we've always had a backup plan. Actually, I would say plan B, C, D, E, F.
On call.
We've had a lot of backup plans to deal with any situation that has come to us. And we were able to do the school nurses at the school district, the Tri-County, for the charter school. We were able to do early on a few other individuals. Public safety officials that qualified under the regs. We were also able to do the housing authorities in both Franklin and Norfolk, those residents, because we managed the Norfolk Housing Authority. And maybe most importantly, we were able to do many homebound seniors. We literally went through the street listing and through the senior center and made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of phone calls from our Board of Health and Senior Center over the past several weeks. Making sure that we reached out to every single individual. At first, we were doing over 90. And then we realized that either a lot of people just, there were some that just simply refused to get a shot for various reasons. Very, very few, but there were people that were over 90 who just said, you know, I'm fine where I am, and I'm just not going to go out, and it's okay. We found that most people had already been to Gillette Stadium, as you would expect. To get their shots. We did administer, I want to say about 16, somewhere about a dozen to a dozen and a half individuals where our Franklin paramedics, as everybody would assume, did actually go to those households and did do those homebound folks who were severely isolated, severely elderly, frail, alone, and made sure that our paramedics were there. A paramedic spent on average about 45 minutes at a site because you have to administer, get set up, have all the proper protocols. Right. And then you have to actually stay for a half hour for people that are high risk in those categories. So
half hour, more than the 15 minutes to normally.
15 yeah. minutes you would normally do for anyone else. And so, you know, I got to tell you, I went to, you know, down to one of the clinics at the housing authority. You know, it's fairly emotional from a lot of people. Just seeing, you know, that, I think, would have been great if our paramedics were able to do a little bit more. I think people love our paramedics. You know, they love our police officers, they love our staff, and there's a reason why. It's disappointing that, you know, obviously it's been documented heavily disappointing the government. Chose a different route, but, you know, on the same end, what we were able to do, we feel really great about what we were able to provide for our first responders, housing authority residents, and then for those that were really severely isolated and homebound, and we were able to get a couple dozen folks on my way too. So, you know, it is what it is. I feel good that I can control what happens in Franklin to some degree. And I do feel like the outreach from our offices was so extensive. Eventually, they went down to 85 and older. I think they went down as young as 80 and older. And we really made sure that the people that were unwilling to go out had no rides, all sorts of dynamics were taken care of. And, you know, it shouldn't be any surprise to anybody in Franklin. Most people had already gone out and taken advantage of the Gillette Stadium offers. But we were able to make sure that those that didn't have those resources.
Yeah, from what I've been hearing through the grapevine, Gillette certainly has been primary, but they've been also successful via CVS and other locations like that too. So yeah, that's
I've heard been a good. Lot of the teachers have been able to get shots at CVS. I've heard of many school staff have been able to prioritize. They prioritize in CVS because it's Johnson and and so it's a mixed bag all over the place. But the good news is that shots are getting in arms, and it's going to take a while to roll out. It's going to take a few more months, and ultimately, if people want to get to if people want to get to phase 4.3 or whatever it is, and they want to open back up, ultimately the vaccine numbers in Massachusetts are going to have to hit a very high percentage of residents being vaccinated in order for that to happen. So, if you care about getting the local economy back, if you care about family and friends, this isn't the time to be a hotshot or a hero. It's time to look into your options and make sure that we're ready to go when you have the shot.
Well, and that's what's great about the pre-registration. You know, I mean, you can go online and get yourself signed up, and that way, when it is your turn, when you're depending upon what eligibility group you're in, then you're already in the system. I know. My family's already in the system waiting, waiting for their turn. So it's a great addition, I think, to the plan. I'm just trying to get as many people ready to go as possible.
FranklinMA.gov, right on the homepage.
It's all there.
Look for the red bar. There's all the links, all the official government sites, all the unofficial non-governmental third party helper sites, Amory's Right, pre-register, get in the game. Get vaccinated
and take it when it comes, for sure.
Yes.
Yep. In the meantime, you also opened the library opened this week for in-person browsing for the first time in a year.
Yeah, I think Felicia sounded pretty happy on our department head's call, Amory.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she's so joyful all the time, so anyway, but you could hear just a little bit of extra joy in her voice today. Having people back in the library.
Yeah, that's good.
She's a great lady and a phenomenal employee, and she's always so positive. And they're really such another huge success story about what's happened this year. Is to be able to, ultimately the programs and the ways that they've delivered programs over the last year are probably here to stay. In addition to the work that they already do, she said it was a little slow. It was the diehards that came in to check the computers and look at the stacks. We know there are plenty of bookworms in Franklin who love the sight and smell and mystery of just stumbling upon a great story. So she opened up this week. I'd say limited hours. I think as time moves on, as the staff gets acclimated, as the public gets acclimated, as we get towards spring, they're going to keep on dripping in programs in person here and some other opportunities. So the people should be excited about the library reopening for in-person services. Ultimately, the only building that's left really closed right now, and it's not 100%, but is really the senior center. Erin Rogers, our new director, is already working on a plan. I think she's been saying probably in a few weeks are going to start some in-person programs selectively. Obviously, the big part people all want to know is when the bacon and eggs return. Yes. And I'm no different.
Breakfast and lunch.
When do the bacon and eggs return? I honestly, it's hard to predict. It's going to depend on the phases. I wouldn't be surprised if in the next month or so, we were looking at, maybe within the after school vacation, we were looking at having some smaller crowds in, just to start getting ourselves back into that rhythm for when, hopefully, when the regs allow us to have more people. Obviously, most of our seniors are vaccinated in town. We know the percentage is very, very high. So that's great news. And so we know that a lot of cafes in town are filling up with seniors. People like me and others, people are going out as they should.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to start getting back into that soon. I will let you know that we've been using the senior center too for our storage of PPE. And so there's some other dynamics. We have to get that, find that a new home.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And while the schools are re-entering by April 5th and April 12th, all of a sudden space in Franklin has become a slight premium.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to work out some other logistics too, but we're going to be back with people soon enough.
Yeah. And I assume since the senior center is one of the newer buildings as well, especially with the expansion to the second floor, that probably has greater capacity or greater accessibility to the new ultraviolet and or high HIPAA filtering, et cetera. Is that,
are you
is that
sure there? That you don't sneak in on our staff meeting?
No, I don't.
Are you sure, Dom? We just spoke about attention. That. We just spoke about, well, I know you did pay attention, but what you're correct. So the municipal building this week, everybody hopefully will check out the great story on Mike D'Angelo. I will also give you a heads up, a bit of a sneak preview, that today on WBZ, the superintendent and Mike, Superintendent Ahern and Mike D'Angelo, did do an interview for Channel 4 for WBZ. So additionally, the municipal building is currently on. So the UV technology is being tested out right now. It is on, its effectiveness and whether there are any adjustments have to happen being tested. Additionally, the senior center is completed. And the three campus schools are all being retrofitted now. And those should be done in the near short future, certainly by the end of the school year. And given the fact that the new federal ARRA fund on the, at least the preliminary regs, the first bullet point on the American Rescue Act money, the first bullet point is to use some of that money for facility upgrades and modernization. And now that all these cities and towns across the country are going to get a bunch of cash, again, can't say this enough. Why do other districts and other towns, why are they not able to do this? Because they don't have Mike D'Angelo. Yeah, exactly. And the reality is Mike and I were talking about this beginning last April in May,
right?
Conceptually, you know, yep. I let him do that. I authorized him to do that project and look into it. And now we're not going to be at a competitive disadvantage when the rest of the world is ordering UV lights and the manufacturers can't keep up with them. Right. Our buildings will be done and everybody else will be fighting for those resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope your listeners, when they hear me say this stuff, you know, it's not just like Jamie talking great stuff about the staff, but these are the little things that go on in our organization every day with the people that we have that are way ahead of the curve that make us and put us in a better position to deal with public policy. And you know, this may seem trivial, but this is a really big deal. And when all these towns get this money across the United States, across the world, we're already done.
Mm-hmm.
And that I just can't say enough about Mike. And it speaks to the reopening. When the seniors come back, they're going to have one of the safest buildings,
sure,
for us to go to. And that's really important to try to keep our seniors and everybody in town safe and our kids. Absolutely. And our teachers and everybody.
Yeah, because I think Milford Daily News had finally picked up the school committee presentation that you and Mike had done. I've shared that out. So I tapped that into the share of the Milford Daily News. As I catch the BZ article, I'll share that and put that plug in there as well. And yeah, for people who are regular listeners, they're picking up on these little things. For people who are new listeners, you know, start putting that second trivia bit aside, other than your job list. We'll have a second trivia bit of the little things that are happening all the time. Right. Where are they happening? We can accumulate that list and then come back and test people and see how well they're really listening.
What does UVGI stand for? No, but I still don't know. I know UV. I still can't pick up.
Ultraviolet. It was actually, it was in the Milford Daily article.
I don't know. Yeah. So, but it was great stuff by Mike, and I'm really happy for him. He's also, by the way, the president of his facilities director association across Massachusetts this year. So,
cool.
You know, he's not just somebody that's a local nerd and engineer. You know, this is a guy that has a tremendous amount of respect against the Commonwealth. And,
right.
One other quick point on Mike. He has renovated or built virtually every building.
In
every school building.
Yeah, all the town buildings, school buildings.
So if you like your ball fields, you like your buildings, you like your schools, you know, if our town hall looks a little different, more efficient than others, it really is, it's Mike's vision.
Well, and speaking of the town hall, you're also redoing the windows, and that's one of his other projects, right?
Another one. Yep, absolutely. That's all, Mike.
For anybody who's been in the town administrator's office, which hopefully maybe most people wouldn't have been, but or been in a few other offices, the council chamber, they know the leaks. They've seen the videos, they've seen the pictures. They know that this is a big project. And ultimately, there's going to be some walls that are going to be ripped out because of mold. But for people that see the cranes around the municipal building, it's due to the project of replacing the windows and the facade of a lot of brick that has rotted away, and we've gotten some very, very heavy leaks, over the years. So, and this is a small, again, one of those small things, but, because we delayed the project due to the expense that we were thinking about incurring, when we went out to bid at the beginning of the pandemic, middle of the pandemic last summer, we went out to bid for the project. The project came in at about 60% less than what the estimates were 2 years ago.
Good timing.
So the taxpayers saved a boatload of cash, to be able to wait. And so we just nailed the market at the right time.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Before we leave the senior center, I know you wanted to talk. You at least observed, I guess, there was something of a St. Pat's meal last week, right?
Second annual. Right,
yes, it was great. I was happy to be able to stop by and see it all going down. I think mm-hmm. it was everybody was excited. The firefighters that were participating and donated and volunteered all their time to prepare the meals, they were excited to continue the tradition. But I think the thing that hit me the most was just seeing the reunions, the curbside reunions. You can see how happy the seniors were to see people they hadn't seen in so long, see Aaron, to see to see Paul, to see the people at the senior mm-hmm. center, and just that they missed. There was a long line wrapped around the building. Mm-hmm. There was Irish music playing. There was mm-hmm. It just felt really good. And we talked a lot out there, the staff that were there, including, Jeff Roy was there. So we were talking about how the last event that was held in the senior center before the shutdown was last year's St. Patrick's Day meal, because it was held a little bit before St. Patrick's Day. It wasn't held actually on the date. And, I remember being there with Sparky the dog and mm-hmm. everybody all packed into the senior center enjoying their meal. So it was great that they found a way to continue the tradition. I think everybody enjoyed it, and not only the meal, but just the experience of seeing everybody face to face.
I saw nothing but good pictures, and I've heard nothing but good things coming out of that, for sure.
It was great.
So there are reminders we've talked about, but continuing to keep the masks, social distancing, all that good stuff, because as we continue to gradually move forward in this reopening, we're starting to see some other events happening. So Black Box is putting things on for April. I know you've talked last time in regards to the Think Franklin First cards, and they're being utilized, and Project Envoy has another calendar coming up for the April month as well. So that while we're still in this, we can help do what we need to do in terms of meals, et cetera, but then through the payback, help the food pantry as well. So there's all goodness there.
Yep, it's all good stuff. It's been great to watch it all come together. And I ran into Raylynn Mercer just last week, and she was super excited about what the Black Box was able to start doing. They have some great shows coming up with some Broadway talent. Mm-hmm. So whether you want, I think some of it may be in person, very limited tickets, obviously, because of there's still a lot of guidelines out there, still a lot of rules, but you can partake of them virtually too. So there's definitely nice to see some of the entertainment things coming back into our lives. But again, we're still crawling back, but mm-hmm. it's fun to see.
Slow but sure. It'll be interesting. I'll have to change some of the nomenclature on the community calendar to make sure that it includes both live and live streaming, to reinforce that the ticket can go both ways. You can actually choose to be there. Obviously, there's a limited inside, but if you don't, you can at least enjoy the live stream, which is going to be a better performance because there's going to be people responding in the audience as well. So
as opposed to just, live clapping.
instead of just, talking to the camera, performing to the camera, which is a unique challenge as well for some performances. So
absolutely. And we've seen a huge uptick the past few weeks. And I think it probably has to do with some of the guidance, just the changes, maybe more people getting vaccinated, more people feeling comfortable. We've seen a really large uptick in, the gift card use, which has been fantastic. You know, some of the local businesses are, seeing hundreds and hundreds of dollars from these cards come through the doors in a week, which is just feels so great knowing that they're getting the business, knowing that they're not paying fees, on the receiving these cards. It's all covered. They're getting, dollar for dollar right back in their bank account. And then again, just the popularity of Project Envoy and how the businesses are giving back. It's just all the feel good stuff.
Yep, definitely. Definitely. And while money's in that topic, that's the next real big thing from an April and May perspective, Jamie, was we get into the kind of the meat of the budget cycle. Although, as we've talked here before, the budget cycle really goes throughout the entire year in different phases. But this is kind of the key piece of the FY22 budget as it starts coming together over the next 2 months.
So sports fans out there, the analogy is this is our playoff. This is not the regular season anymore. Now we're into the playoff run. And next week on the 31st, the end of March, and then probably the first council meeting in April, we'll have the first round one of capital requests. We held off this year on the traditional schedule with capital because we wanted to see what the governor's budget numbers were for the operating and just to make sure we had a little extra. We didn't overspend, basically. Mm-hmm. We didn't buy stuff that we couldn't afford, and we wanted to make sure that we preserved all the jobs in the, as much as possible in the budget and in the operating budget issues. So the capital budget is separate. It is funded through what is called free cash, which is not cash nor free. It's basically unspent money from the previous fiscal year. The town of Franklin's departments do an unbelievable job managing their budgets. And oftentimes come well in under budget. Those are just due to normal triage of the organization for a year. A good example I like to use of free cash often is, somebody is an employee, you budget for them in May, and then maybe they unknowingly retire, or they leave to take another job and get a promotion. That leaves a 2 or 3 month cycle sometimes to replace that individual.
Yep.
That money that was not spent is unused, gets declared with the state and gets certified at the end of the year when they check your books. And then that money gets certified and goes into free cash. And that free cash traditionally in Franklin has been going, I think, well before I got here. It's a great way of doing it. Many other towns tell me this all the time. They use free cash to plug holes in their budget each year. But the free cash traditionally goes to our buildings, maintenance, for facilities and schools, and traditionally towards our vehicle fleet, maybe some other odds and ends projects. One of the reasons when I hear people come, when I meet every new employee, particularly with police and fire, one of the top reasons people always want to come to Franklin to be a firefighter, a paramedic, a police officer, and they're new to the field, one of the top 2 or 3 reasons always is that those people want to come here the best and the brightest because of how well we maintain our equipment and how well we prepare and how well we train our employees. This came up the other night, Steve, even on the call from the Franklin Area Against Racism, where the mandatory amount of training that the cops do is around 40 hours. Well, we do a minimum of 72. Minimum of 76. So we're almost double what it is. And that's because we prioritize in the system that we've developed, which is a well-oiled machine. We've invested heavily in equipment, in good vehicles, and have a great rotation for our police and fire. Just a small example.
Yeah.
So that capital budget will be going for the town council subcommittee chaired by Councilor Pellegrini on Wednesday, and then likely before the full council, one of the first meetings. And then to dovetail, if people are looking for the archive, by the way, on what we spend the money on, what we've done, about 4 or 5 years ago, I created an archive. Just go to franklinma.gov, town budget, it's right there on the front.
Yep.
And you can go look for capital budget. All my memos from the past several years and capital plans are generally all there. You can see what that program looks like. In terms of the town operating budget, this is very similar to people, basically your household. If you think about it like your household, how much money do you bring in every year and anticipate, and what your costs. The town's operating budget will begin, will likely be released. The target date is April 16th. On that Friday is when the town administrator's recommended budget will be placed out for everybody to see. It'll be laid out in that same link that I just spoke of a minute ago.
The budget link.
We're going to mimic what we did last year with all the appendices, the historical data. The staff and I are putting all that together right now. That's why I try not to have meetings for a few weeks, because I'm usually sitting there typing as much as anyone else. But that'll come out on the 16th. The finance committee hearings will start on April 27th, 28th, 29th, and May 4th.
Yep.
A preliminary schedule right now is breaking news, Steve. No, but it truly, the first night will be general government, debt, and benefits. The second night will likely be police and fire and public safety and building. The third night on the 29th of April is going to be the DPW. And we believe May 4th is going to be the school department.
Okay.
So and we'll put all these on the calendar soon, but for the listeners out there, any one of those topics is of interest for you, you should mark the calendars now. And then eventually the full budget will be before the town council before Memorial Day.
Yeah.
On the traditional Wednesday and Thursday on back-to-back budget hearing nights. And I do anticipate, and I'm hopeful that a joint budget subcommittee meeting will be set up sometime in April. And certainly later if dates, you know, it's hard to get everybody in on the same day. So we're working on some scheduling conflicts, but
right.
We're hoping to have one of those meetings between the council, the school committee, the finance committee, all in one hearing sometime in April. So that's it in a nutshell, Steve.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Scheduling is always a complication when you bring in, especially joint budget, to bring in town council, FinCom, school committee, and certainly the town administration staff, school staff, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Their budget, if I recall, their approval is like April 13th, that first school committee meeting in April. So likely right after that, but then we also have April break. So it's going to be a tough calendar to get it in. And then before the budget hearings starting at the end of the month, but there should be time. So stay
tuned. I think there's going to be plenty of time. It's interesting, Steve. I mean, this is the normal schedule, actually.
It is.
I mentioned was different earlier. That's a separate piece. But for the operating budget, we've been trying to slide it back into that normal slot.
Yep.
I agree with you because of all the other dynamics with schools coming back and stuff. Those are the things that are changing that are making some of the dates difficult. In fact, I should mention as we move forward, a lot of this changes. And it actually, you bring up a good point, which is that's why this is the playoff run, right? Where you got to kind of, if you really want to know what's going on in the town budget out there for all the listeners, you really got to kind of pay attention for it. You know, and you got to try to attend as much as possible, or I will give credit where credit is due. Listen to the audio on Franklin Matters. Check Franklin TV out. They rerun many of the meetings.
Right.
If you can't make them live, just listen in for a couple hours. And the videos
available on demand as well, too.
Videos on demand. You can live stream it. You know, if there are listeners out there that are thrilled with the way the public were spending the money, then great. You know, I mean, I appreciate that support, but people are looking to understand a little bit more of the machinations. It does kind of take, it's not just all in one hour session. It is an evolving process. And I can tell you that the reason why it's evolving a little is exactly what you just said, Steve. The school budget gets their thing done in April. The House of Representatives, by the way, passes their budget in April. The state Senate actually passes their state budget after the town council does their budget.
Right.
And we're using the governor's numbers. And so this is for professionals in the municipal and state finance world. This is the way the calendar works.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no one page cheat sheet that's gonna get people really into the type of information you want. And now is the kind of time to start paying attention if you're listening out there and you're interested in the budget. Now's the time to pay attention.
Yeah, because we talked, and I know particularly a couple of times last year, because particularly in the start of the pandemic, where the dynamics were even that much more, you know, swinging one way or the other. We didn't know what was going on. This year, it's more of a more akin to the normal line. But while we're talking about the budget cycle in terms of the development of FY22, you're still operating on FY21. So effectively, we've got the two budgets, and one's coming towards an end as 21 finishes in June. 22 is starting to start in July, but then it really doesn't complete until the budget the tax rate gets set in December. So there's really two curves that are happening over time. And for the normal person, that's why we have some of these discussions, to make sure where are we, what's going on, what's happened, what changed, because there's not really a one pager other than your one page link, at least to get there, to find out all the documentation.
And I'll say, like I did last year, if you got a half hour, please read my executive summary in the budget narrative when that comes out on April 16th. If you've got a few hours, dig a little deeper into the document, look for the department you're interested in. Everything's keyword searchable within the document, the PDF. You can dig in and try to see, who makes what, what does each department go up each year, the trajectory is right there. If you have more time, you have more interest in that, tune into some of the meetings, listen to the audio. They're fairly informative, especially as you said before, at the finance committee hearings in April and early May. Most people should really get their questions answered about the big picture of how it's coming up.
Yeah, I know that. So aside from these and the other meetings I participate in, respectfully, the FinCom meetings are generally where I learn the most, because that's where the details, and kudos to the FinCom for asking good questions, but kudos to the department heads for taking time to talk about their drivers, because that's really, you're aware of it, we're aware of it, but then they get into the details, they get into the stories, and that's where, that's where it matters. I mean, there is a prioritization, there is a rationale for why we're doing this here or that there.
And it's funny you bring that up. I mean, ending on a little bit more of a philosophical conversation, but from a legal and charter standpoint, town charter, our constitution, in Franklin, essentially, there's different roles for different bodies of people, of groups, of boards and committees, right? The town administrator's responsibilities are pretty straightforward. And I put that out there. And the finance committee is not elected. They are appointed and ratified by all of us. So there's a check and balance there. And I've always said that the finance committee is ultimately like the public peer review. That's not, and when George Conley often, member Conley or others say, sometimes we feel like we rubber stamp these things. I feel like they're doing themselves a disservice, really, because they do dig into this stuff. They do give ample public comment opportunity. They do ask inquisitive questions. And I think the conclusion of the finance committees have routinely been, on unanimous basis, the town of Franklin's doing an excellent job managing the public's money and prioritizing the right thing. And I think the town council and the school committee roles are much different, and they're designed that way. In all due respect to the town council, I think when you're looking at taxpayer money, taxpayers traditionally look to the departments to ask more questions, who spend the most money. And so when you have them ask a lot of questions about the school department or the DPW, the reason for that is they're the two largest budgets in town. Yep. And they reach every square inch of the community. There's nothing the school department or the DPW does. Most people don't call the police. Most people don't call for an ambulance. A lot of people just are happy that someone's there, and they know that that resource is there, but they may not actually really be interested in those departments because they haven't had to need them, or they don't need them on a routine basis. Absolutely. That's not the case. Not everybody goes to the library, right? So, so but every, no matter what your age, no matter what your demographic, no matter whether you're young or old, a child or an adult, senior or a parent, you have a vested interest in the schools and the DPW. And the elected officials focus on that for that reason, because it does hit every part of town. And so, oftentimes, I think folks tune into the council meetings to try to figure the whole thing out. And I think you're right. Their role is actually not to figure the whole thing out. That's the finance committee's role, Steve. And you've kind of said this, and I've said this, and Anne-Marie said this. That's why those meetings, if you have some extra hours, they're good to tune into, because you might ask them some questions about the Board of Health. There are questions about the comptroller, or about debt, or about the treasurer collector's office, or about the new hire over here, GIS. But the council may not ask some of that stuff. And it's not because they're not doing their job. It's because they are doing their job. They're focusing their time where the citizens really, you know, are asking them to spend their time.
Right. They're akin to the short answer I generally have to other citizens when they ask is effectively a school committee has two responsibilities, provide oversight and hire a superintendent to operate. Town council parallel is provide oversight legislatively and then to hire you, because then you do everything else on the operation side. They still have oversight. And if anything, that's where they get in trouble, because they try to do your job and manage. And as always, and from time to time that happens, that's human nature, but you know.
It is really human nature. And I think that when you have passionate people that care about certain things, you know, that's always gonna come out. I think you see that on the school committee as well. And
absolutely.
People like us who have worked in other communities or work really closely with other communities, this is really no different than any other town. You know, they're all the same. They're really, the systems may be a little different, the mechanics, but it doesn't change the power centers or the checks and balances, which are oftentimes largely pretty darn similar. Our government's a little bit different, obviously, because we're a city form of government, but that notwithstanding, you know, we could argue all day about the differences. The truth is most of this stuff have the pretty similar dynamics, and it's with all due you know, comes out of, I think, a pure place, a deep interest. We live in a unique time with a lot of information flying around the place. So yeah, sometimes they poke in, but they do the same thing as the superintendent. They're doing this the same thing as the town managers next door, and even the other town staff, and I think it's well within their right to ask a lot of questions. And you know, we enjoy as staff members, not to hopefully not sound corny, but we do enjoy those challenging questions that a lot of them raise. And they're raising those things because people are asking them this stuff at the soccer field or in stores or out on the street or, you know, used to be at the bar or, you know, restaurants or family gatherings. They're asking, people are asking these questions, and they do the same thing as school committee members. And they oftentimes do a lot of the same things to the finance committee.
Sure.
So, a good, healthy process.
It is. And I certainly listen and pay attention, because it's a lot of the inside stories, if you will, though the inside question. They may ask this, but they really mean that. And listening to that helps foster our conversation. These are the things that we need to address. And in this format, thankful for your time, et cetera, we can take the time to do it, because in many cases, it's not just a soundbite that's going to do it. We have to spend some time to do it. So.
Yeah, we've gotten too used to sound bites. We'll end on that high note.
And thank you again for taking the time to do this, to spend some of the time inside the story of Talking Franklin.
My pleasure, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here as always.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.